On January the 12th, 2010, the earthquake hit and devastated Haiti. You remember it well. It left the country in complete devastation, and the country is still recovering from it today. During the earthquake, whenever it hit, there were few people who were able to leave the country. There was, however, one family, a French family called the Desarmes family, and they were able to evacuate just a few weeks after the chaos began. They, although they were in Haiti, they had family in South America, and so Pierre, who was 34 at the time and the father of the family, he used his business contacts to secure passage for his parents, for his immediate family, also for his brothers and their families, as well as his cousins. So 11 days later, he, on the 23rd of January, just after the earthquake in Haiti, he eventually arrived in Santiago, Chile. But just 1 month later, they were hit, of course, then by an earthquake in Santiago in Chile. And that, of course, that was one of the worst earthquakes in the history of Chile. And I'm sure if you imagine yourself to be in that man's shoes, as he left Haiti, as he left the wreck and the ruin and the rubble behind him, as he started off afresh in Chile, he would have thought to himself, surely things can't get any worse now. Surely things can only get better. But of course, as he discovered, things sadly got worse. And you know, if you were to come to Habakkuk after verse 4, I'm sure that Habakkuk would have felt just like that man Pierre. I'm sure if you came to him after he had been praying, and praying long, and praying hard, and praying for God to intervene, and God to grant restoration, and he looked around and he saw the sin of the nation. I'm sure if you came to Habakkuk and you asked him how he would have felt just like Pierre. Surely things can't get any worse. Things must surely just get better. Verses 2 to 4, we find he had been praying long and praying hard. He had been praying out of violence that God would intervene, that God would restore the fallen people, Judah. Remember Judah, of course, they were in the backdrop of revival, but now they are in spiritual recession. And in verses 3 and 4, we see Habakkuk looking around. What does he see? He sees the bickering of the people. He sees the slackness of God's law. He sees the coldness of God's people, the lack of strength in the court system. And he asks for God to intervene, but so far, God hasn't intervened. And so if you come to Habakkuk at the end of verse 4, he must be thinking, surely things can't get any worse. Things surely can only get better. And in verse 5, God then finally answers. God, he reminds Habakkuk that all the while, although he had been praying, although he'd been praying long and praying hard, he was listening all the while. But whenever God does answer Habakkuk, you find that he answers him by essentially saying this, Habakkuk. In verses 5 to 11, things are not going to get better for you. Things are actually going to get worse. And rather than grant a restoration of God's people, rather than grant a revival, an immediate revival of God's people, what does the Lord do? Well, he tells Habakkuk from verses 5 to 11 that he's going to take a bad nation, his people Judah, and he's going to judge them with a worse nation, the nation of Babylon. He is going to raise up Babylon and he is going to judge Judah. And sometimes before things get better, they will tragically get worse. They will get worse before they get better. Maybe like Habakkuk, you've been praying. And you say, Lord, how long? You say, Lord, it seems as if you've been inactive. Lord, you've been, as it were, like Habakkuk felt. You've been sleeping. You've been doing absolutely nothing. And then the Lord comes eventually. And he says in verse 5, I'm going to work a work, but you're not going to believe what I'm going to do. And he actually, when things you feel should get better, he actually makes things worse. When have you ever had a situation like that? Well, you're praying for God to intervene, praying for God to make a matter better, but it actually gets worse. Well, this is what happened to Habakkuk. Verses 1 to 4, he prays, he's praying out of violence. He's praying that God would intervene mightily. He says, look, Lord, things are so bad. And yet the Lord comes and says, Habakkuk, things are going to get even worse. This is what happens in verses 5 to 11. This is the lot of Habakkuk. And then in verses 12 to 17, Habakkuk then, he takes time and he reminds himself of certain qualities that God has. And in the opening study, verses 1 to 4, Habakkuk, he feels as if he's inactive. God is inactive. But now in verses 12 through to 17, Habakkuk feels as if God's inconsistent. Lord, you're holy. Lord, you're faithful. Lord, you're powerful. But it doesn't seem that this is reflected in what you're doing. And so, if you could put a question mark on the first study, Lord, are you listening? The second question you could ask in this study is, Lord, do you know what you're doing? Lord, do you know what you're doing? And this evening we want to simply consider the subject puzzled by God's plan. Puzzled by God's plan. We have three simple thoughts we want to bring to you this evening. The first thought is this, the unfolding of God's plan. The unfolding of God's plan. Of course, we said, verses 5 to 11, the Lord comes and the Lord unfolds God's plan to Habakkuk. Verses 5 and 6, we read, behold ye among the heathen, and regard, wonder marvelously, for I will work a work in your days which you will not believe, though it be told you. I raise up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation, which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. Remember the sentiments of Habakkuk's prayer. He had prayed for divine intervention. He had prayed out of violence that the Lord would come and that the Lord would grant restoration. But he felt that the Lord wasn't listening. And if he was listening, he was inactive, that he wasn't doing anything about it, that he simply didn't care. But verse 5, the Lord comes to Habakkuk and he says, Habakkuk, you're wrong. I've been listening all the while. I've been listening to you praying. I've been listening to your crying. And now I'm going to move and now I'm going to act. But it wouldn't be in the way that Habakkuk wanted. Every prophet, of course, wanted spiritual revival for their nation. And Habakkuk was no different. But rather than coming and restoring and reviving God's people, what does he say? He says in verse 5, I will work a work in your days which you will not believe, though it be told you. The word work here is a picturesque word. In the Hebrew, it was translated in different ways in the Hebrew Bible. For example, it's used of a tradesman. It's used of a carpenter shaping a piece of furniture. It was used of the potter taking a piece of clay and shaping it into an ornament. And what God is saying here to Habakkuk is this. I'm going to work a work in your days. And I'm working just thoroughly and I'm working methodically. I'm shaping the nation of Judah. But you're not going to like the ornament that I'm going to produce. Now, what was God's plan? What was this plan that he unfolded to Habakkuk? Well, very simply, it was this. In a nutshell, that rather than coming and reviving Judah, the southernmost tribe of Israel and his covenant people, rather than reviving him, he was going to come in retribution. He was going to judge them by sending a worse nation, Babylon, to take her into captivity. But it was all part of a far bigger and grander scheme. It was all part of God's global plan for his people. There he states in verse 5, behold ye among the heathen. The word heathen there just simply means nations. And he was essentially saying to Habakkuk this, the plan that I have for my people, it's a global plan. It involves the nations of the world. And whilst he was dealing with his people, the children of Judah, in such a way, he was actually doing it to fulfill his overarching plan for the world and ultimately then his people. And we must remember that in trials, our puzzles are all part of a bigger jigsaw. They are all part of God's plan for the world. Sometimes when we go through a personal trial, or a congregational trial, or a national trial, we look at it with a blinkered point of view. We should always view suffering, rather than being short-sighted, we need to have that long-sighted view that God is working out His purposes, His plan for the world. It's easy to look at Ulster today. Look at America, look at the nations such as Iraq and Iran and so on, and say there's so much confusion. But we must always view it in light of the fact that God is working globally. God has a global plan. God has a global plan for each and every nation. For example, in Romans 9 verse 17, we read the scripture saith unto Pharaoh, even for this purpose have I raised thee up, that I might show my power in thee, and that my name might be declared throughout all the earth. Paul here is referring to the Exodus and to Pharaoh. And he's saying, remember how the Egyptians had the Jews in bondage for over 40 years. Then I raised up Pharaoh, and I sent plague after plague upon him. But what happened to Pharaoh? Did he soften? No. He got harder and he got harder, and this impacted the Lord's people. That hardness actually made things worse for the people of God. But ultimately God raised up Pharaoh for the good and benefit of God's people. You see, we as believers are not to be narrow-minded, we are to be globally minded and open-minded. We're to remember that the world is far bigger than our personal and national problems. There's a big picture. It's always good to keep that in mind, child of God. Always good to keep that in mind. When you're going through suffering or there's something that's happening that you don't understand, remember this, that there is a God in heaven and He's working everything out. What is God's overarching plan for this world? It is this. That before this world was ever created, before the heavens were set, God had purposed in Jesus Christ that there would be a people saved out of every tribe, every tongue, and every nationality throughout the generations. And sometimes God does things that we don't understand. He raises up nations. He makes them fall. Isn't that what Daniel says? He raiseth up and he putteth down nations. But ultimately, it's for his own glory and his own power. An individual named James McConkie once said, when the architect draws the plans for his stately palaces, they're not a design in mind. Shall the artist sketch the outlines merely of his masterpiece? Shall the shipbuilder lay down the lines for his colossal ship? And yet shall God not have any plan for the soul? Every cloud that floats across the summer sky, every blade of grass that points its spear heavenward, God has a purpose and a plan. The Lord has a purpose. He has a plan. And Habakkuk, he was just told this plan. It was a national plan. God was going to use one nation, a worse nation, to judge the nation of Judah. Now, was this really all that bad? You say, what were the Babylonians like? What was the captivity really like? Well, in these verses, he then unfolds what they were really like. Verse 7, we see their severity. We read, they are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity shall proceed of themselves. The Babylonian nation, as Habakkuk here was receiving this information from the Lord, they were already a global superpower for some 20 years. At this stage, they would come and they were being raised up. They had the sway, as it were, and they were going to come and take Judeans to their land. They were a cruel, cruel nation. They were severe. One historian said, boys and girls were burned alive. Men were deprived of their ears. Women were carried into slavery. The Babylonians were going to come, and they were going to slay men, women, and children. Their severity, their rapidity, verse 8, their horses are swifter than the leopards, and are more fierce than the evening wolves. They shall fly as the eagle that hasteth to eat. The leopard is one of the fastest animals on the earth, and it's also one of the most vicious. And the Lord comes to Habakkuk and says this, the nation of Judah, they're going to be taken by the nation of Babylon, and they're going to come like leopards. Very fast, very vicious. You look at the other animals he uses there, as shall fly as the eagle that hasteth to eat. You know the picture there? The eagle, it's stalking its prey, and it's just hovering over its prey, and then all of a sudden, it swoops down, and it takes its prey very quickly. It's like an eagle that hasteth to eat. And he says, this is what the Babylonians are going to be like. They're going to swarm, as it were, and then suddenly, they're just going to come. Their severity, rapidity, but also their vanity. In verse 11, we find that they praise their own might as a source of victory. You remember what King Nebuchadnezzar said? He said, is not this great Babylon that I have built? Habakkuk was praying. Habakkuk was praying that God would intervene. And what does God do? He enlists a swift, a severe, a sinful people to accomplish his purposes. There was an old godly lady who lived by faith. When food was low in her cupboard, she would just simply get down on her knees and she would pray to the Lord to fill the cupboards again. She had an old neighbor that was an atheist. And on one occasion, she came to the cupboards. They were very, very low. And so she opened her window and she prayed out the window and she made sure that the neighbor heard. And she prayed hard for food to come. The neighbor heard it and he said to himself, well, I'll prove her wrong. I'll go and I'll buy her groceries and I'll set them on her door and I'll prove to her that her God doesn't exist. He went and did it. He bought her groceries. He then left them on her porch in a bag. The lady came out into the porch. She saw this bag of groceries. She saw that her neighbor was hiding just over the hedge and she shouted up, glory to God. Thank you, Lord, for sending the food. The neighbor jumped up up above the fence and he said, it wasn't God that brought you the food, it was me. And the lady responded, the Lord sent it, even if he had to use the devil to bring it. And folks, we must always remember that God can use even the devil to accomplish his purposes. You ask Habakkuk after verse 4, Habakkuk, how are you feeling? Habakkuk says, I don't think that things could get any worse. And the Lord comes to him in verses 5 to 11. And he says, I'm sending a nation and they're going to come and judge Judah. And they're a worse nation. They're vicious. They're swift. They're sinful. There was the unfolding of God's plan. I want you to see secondly here, there was then the unveiling of God's person. Verse 13 we read, thou art of purer eyes than to behold evil, and canst not look in iniquity. Wherefore lookest thou upon them that deal treacherously, and holdest thy tongue when the wicked devoureth the man that is more righteous than he? Habakkuk felt as if the Lord wasn't listening. But the Lord reminded him he was listening all along. He was working a work. He was going to produce something that would completely dumbfound and startle Habakkuk. And when he answered, he told Habakkuk he was going to judge Judah, a sinful nation, by bringing an even worse nation, the Babylonians, to judge his people. Now in verse 12 to the end of the chapter, we have Habakkuk's response to what God has just told him. And I think this is very interesting. I want you to see this. In verse 12, what does Habakkuk do? Does he wag his finger at God and say, this is wrong, this is unjust? No, he doesn't. He reminds himself of certain truths, certain certainties about God. Martin Lloyd-Jones, in his little book, From Fear to Faith in Habakkuk, he said this. He said, sometimes we must think instead of speaking. And Habakkuk, from verse 12 to verse 17, Habakkuk begins to think. He has just received bad news, remember. The Lord's not moving in a way that he wants to. And so rather than lashing out, rather than charging God, he thinks to himself, what is my God really like? And then he applies what God is really like, some certainty, some truths about God, to his situation. Is it not the truth that when we're going through a trial, we take the situation and we reverse it and we apply it then to God? We see that the hardship, we see the difficulties, and we say, God, why are you doing this if you are? But Habakkuk, he reverses it. He says, Lord, I know what you're like, and he then applies it to this situation. So what does he think about God? Rather than speaking, what does he think in prayer about who God is? Well, I want you to see that he focuses in on certain truths about God. He focuses here on his eternity. His eternity, verse 12, art thou not from everlasting, O Lord my God? He remembers that God is eternal. There never was a time when he was not, and there will never be a time when he will cease to be. He always has been, and he always will be. Because of this, God can neither improve, or get worse, or change. So God, Habakkuk is reminding himself, because God is eternal, he can't change. He was essentially saying, thou, God, changest not. And he then applies an unchanging God to his situation. He thinks about his eternity. He thinks also about God's purity. Verse 13, thou art of purer eyes than to behold evil, and canst not look on iniquity. Wherefore lookest thou upon them that deal treacherously? God's holiness is not something that he does. God's holiness is something that he is. God is holy. And because God is holy, he doesn't act outside of his holy nature. Habakkuk takes this truth. Lord, you're holy. And what you seem to be doing at the moment is unholy. Nevertheless, I'm going to trust you because thou art a holy God. His eternity, his purity, also his fidelity or his faithfulness. Verse 12, he simply says, we shall not die. What does he mean by this? He can't mean himself personally or his family. One day he will die. He's speaking here about the Jewish nation. And he reminds himself that the Jewish people, they would never die in the sense that they would never be cast off. Because they were God's people, and they were God's covenant people, and so he would always be faithful. He would ensure that his people would always exist, that they would never die. Also, he reminded himself of God's potency, or his power. He says, O mighty God. And he reminds himself of certain truths about God. Lord, you're righteous. Lord, you're holy. Lord, you're faithful. Lord, you are powerful. And Lord, I don't understand what you're doing at the moment. Nevertheless, you've said you're these things, and so I'm leaving the matter with you. And sometimes before we come back, we must firstly consider. Remember who God is. Is it not the case when you see national suffering or personal suffering that the tendency is to act rashly, to lash out, to say, is God this? If he's not doing that, is God holy? Is God these things? And it's far better to take the approach of Habakkuk, to think. Sometimes even before you pray, it's good to think, to remind yourself certain objective qualities, certain objective certainties that don't change about God. The fact that he is eternal, the fact that he is unchangeable, the fact that he is pure. The fact that he is faithful. And perhaps it may not seem that he is these things currently in your own personal circumstance. But nevertheless, he changeth not. And so he is acting, although you may not understand it, he is acting according to his holiness, his faithfulness, and his power. Teacher asked little boy one day to complete the following sentence. The sentence was this: cleanliness is next to. Little boy thought for a while, and he said, "Miss, cleanliness is next to impossible." And you know, when you think about it, that is not so with God. It is possible with God because it is part of Himself. You're going through difficulties this evening. Feel as if God isn't answering your prayers. And if He is answering you, He hasn't answered in a way that you wanted to, or a way that you expected. Lean hard on these anchors: that God's faithful, that God's righteous, that God is pure, that God's powerful. And take those anchors, take those rocks with which to lean upon, and then apply them to your situation. And you know what you'll find? You'll find that your perspective will change dramatically. It'll change dramatically. You'll be able to take that situation and say, "I know God's righteous. I know God's holy. And I don't understand what He's doing at this present moment in time. But at the same time, it must be according to who God is. And so I'm going to trust Him." And throughout this chapter, this is what happens to Habakkuk. Because in the last few verses, Habakkuk's perspective begins to change. You remember that little outline I gave to you about the book? Chapter 1 is all about faith wavering, but chapter 2 is all about faith watching. And towards the end of chapter 1, we see Habakkuk's personal faith progress to faith watching. So here we have the unfolding of God's plan and the unveiling of God's person. But lastly and quickly, I want you to see here the unwrapping of God's patience. We read in verse 17, Habakkuk here still in prayer to the Lord, he asks him a question: "Shall they therefore empty their net and not spare continually to slay the nations?" In the closing verses of this chapter, verses 14 and following, Habakkuk uses an interesting image. He uses the image of a fisherman casting the net into the sea and his net being full, and he states, this is just what the Babylonians were like. They were coming. They were casting their nets. They were coming in their horses. They were swifter than leopards. They were casting out their net and they were snagging hundreds of men, hundreds of women, hundreds of children. And they were proud and they were conceited in their efforts. And Habakkuk then, after all of this searching and all of this pondering on who God is, he asks him a question: "Shall they therefore empty their net?" In other words, he's saying this: "Lord, I believe that you're patient. Lord, when is their nets going to be empty? Lord, when are they going to stop this? How long will they keep doing this for? Lord, how long are you going to let them do this? How long, Lord, when the Babylonians come, are you going to permit that they prevail over your people?" And he reminded himself that the Lord was going to be patient and forbearing, even with the sins of Babylon, to accomplish his purposes for his people. What's he doing here in verse 17? He's taking the truths of verses 12 and 13, and he's simply saying, "Lord, do something about it. Lord, you're faithful. Lord, you're holy. Lord, you're powerful. Now, Lord, do something about it. How long, Lord, will it be till their nets are empty?" And after consideration and then a contemplation, there must then be prayer, a taking of those truths again to God. Habakkuk now, he's saying, "Lord, I'm waiting for you to do something." It's not the how long of verse 2, the how long of anxiety. It's the how long of expectation. "Lord, how long are you going to let this happen?" And I want you to see the process that he goes on in this chapter. And tonight, this needs to be your process in prayer. You're grappling with giants. You think to yourself, "Why is God doing this now?" We need to go on that process like Habakkuk. Don't lash out and don't be rash. But take time, think about who God is, and after you've thought about who God is, then take it to the Lord in prayer. "Yes, Lord, you're forbearing. But Lord, how long? How long are you going to let this happen? Because I know you're righteous. I know you're faithful. I know you're holy. So Lord, how long are you going to let this situation happen? I want you to see the progress before we close in chapter 1. Lord, are you listening? This is the first four verses. Then in the next verses, it's, Lord, do you know what you're doing? Do you know what you're doing, Lord? But now here at the end of the chapter, it's, Lord, how long are you going to do it for? Lord, how long are you going to permit this if I know certain truths about your character? So I trust the Lord will bless this study to your hearts and lives this evening.